Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. I ended the segment by asking you, are the kids, the children, the young people, the next generation, are they okay? And I am going to answer my own question by saying no. No, they are not. They are hungry. They're not getting enough rest. They are traumatized. They're being mistreated. They're being ignored and overlooked. They're living in impoverished conditions. They're going to substandard schools. Are the children okay? They are most definitely not okay. So what we are saying is that we don't want to have a future in this country, because it's black folks and brown folks and indigenous folks and folks not of color that we know the future is in our children. Our children are not okay. They're getting arrested in Tennessee. They're fighting in Baltimore. They're beating each other up in Philadelphia. They're shooting in Baltimore. They're shooting in Philadelphia. They're fighting down in Atlanta. These are our children. They're not okay. So what does this call upon us to do? Maybe celebrate another Juneteenth Day. Why not? Let's have another MLK celebration. Like, let's just have a good time. Let's get ready for Halloween and Easter and Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day. Let's get ready for Christmas. Let's keep finding ways to get sucked in this system rather than separating ourselves. I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm starting to wonder. Is that the only answer? We're just talking today. We're talking about inequality and inequity. We're talking about the future of our children, the future of this country. We're talking about us. 410-319-8888. I'm going to Mark, Ben, and then Richard. And then there's a line open for you. Hey, Mark, how are you? Mark, are you with us, sir? Yes, I can. How you doing?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I was thinking about your question because it made me think about how it's written that the children will suffer for the sins of the parents. Mm. And the parents had an opportunity to listen to, like I can say, all the parents. However, if you couldn't have been on the planet at that time and not have known the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and what he did. This is a man that had third grade education. He was in Georgia, too. Sandersville, I think. And he raised up a nation for us with Allah's guidance. So now that we have not taken advantage of the opportunity, then, and we put our fear in the wrong place, Allah is going to show us, because we were here for 400 years and they weren't able to take us out. But now the protection has been lifted. So this is only the beginning of sorrows. There's some things coming down the road.
Hmm. Well, that's not good to hear. I mean, let me just say, Mark, this is not a good phone call when you're like, this is the beginning of sorrow.
Well, we had to recognize who we have been dealing with. We don't see him for who he is. But this man, he has never had our best interests in mind. He never will. And we have to understand that clearly. Anytime a man will spend hours in a tree waiting for a deer to go by, if the deers weren't, if the deers or the animals weren't out there to hunt, they'd be hunting us. Mm. So it's sad, but it's true. But we have to come to the realization that we have to come together one place and build our own nation right in the middle of hell, whether we like it or not.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Mark. Hey, folks, I think that what Mark said, it actually struck a nerve with me. We got to build our own place. Why don't we just, let's just kind of take Mark's idea that he put on the table and let's expand it a little bit. Like, we got to build our own little piece of heaven. Our own little piece of forever, our own little piece of tomorrow while we are in the midst of H-E-double-L. And I spell it out. I know there are children listening. H-E-double-L. Do we have to do that? We got to build our own little piece of heaven. See, okay, so what that means is that we are still strangers in this land. That's what that means. If we have to build out our own little piece of forever, our own little piece of heaven, if we got to build out our own little, then we are still strangers in a foreign land. And we're saying Frederick Douglass lied. We're saying my grandparents lied. We're saying your grandparents lied. We're saying Ida B. Wells lied. We're saying Dr. King lied. We are strangers in this land. We are saying that the 1619 Project is a joke and this land does not belong to us. I am not saying it belongs to us and not to indigenous people. I'm saying it belongs to indigenous people and us. Us too. It's the us's that built this country. Let's be very clear. We did it on our backs and we did it without pay. And we did it not because we wanted to, but we were enslaved, but we did it anyway. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Ben, then Richard, Betty, and Dwayne. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing well, Dr. K.
Thanks for calling.
You put a lot on the table.
So,
you made me angry at first. But when you're talking about the children, and you're not making it any better. So, I want to address several things. Our center of power has been eroded.
Mm.
And what I mean by that, I'm talking about the church. I'm talking about the NAACP. I'm talking about the Black Caucus. And there are other centers of power, but you know they were small. But the thing is, they've been usurped because of the fact that they're not active and they have been lulled to sleep.
Mm.
We have not supported them, and they're not putting forth an agenda. So the way I see it, in order to correct what we're going through now, we need to reinvigorate those centers of power for us, the organization. Organizing, because that's what the church was, the organizers that got this movement going and kept it going. Because we need to be re-energized when we get weary and can't feel that we can't go any further. And we go to church to get reinvigorated to continue, or we go to the NAACP and help out and volunteer or give financial support and all those other organizations trying to do things. But this time around, we needed to develop more avenues of communication to replace the present leadership with a younger leadership that has a burning in their soul to do our bidding, and that is to gain our footing in this country so that we can be a free people.
What does freedom look like? Let me ask you this, Ben. What does freedom look like?
We don't know what freedom is. I don't know what freedom is. I never had it.
Right.
It's like that, what's that psychological thing? When you're in the cave and you got the shadows and all you see the shadows, you don't know what's really outside. I can't remember that in its totality, but I think you understand what I'm saying. I have no idea what freedom is. I look at white people and see how they have the audacity to do whatever that they do, to talk to police any kind of way they can, and not get retribution on that. So I don't know what that's like. I never had that. To have a freedom mindset, let me put it this way. I don't even have an African mindset. Because when I talk to Africans, I realize we don't think the same. We don't see things in the same light. I realize I've really been Americanized, even though I have taken time out to study and to read and to reprogram myself from this system that I haven't found myself in.
All right, so, thank you so much. I mean, I want to leave it there, okay. Ben. I think that what you're saying is going to help make people think. The idea of having an African mindset, an idea of having a mindset of what it means to be free.
Yes.
We got to talk about that. Thank you so much, Ben. I appreciate that.
You're
Let's
welcome.
Go to Richard on the line. We have Richard, Betty, Dwayne, and Jean. Richard, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. I'm calling sometime.
I know. Welcome
Personally,
back.
Because basically, I'm just getting tired of this black and white thing. And what I mean by that, we could do something. And every time I call, used to call on a regular basis, when we had cops like that, Mm-hmm. Especially it's our fault. Mm-hmm. Because, number one, you talk about bad schools, the kids not learning anything. Well, you have to go back to the home. Like you asked me one time, I said I was 83. Well, I know when I was coming up, we were a lot poor. We had segregated school. But our parents were there for. My mother used to come up there unannounced. And I look back there and somebody said, your mother's back there. I look. They don't do that now, basically. That's number one. It's our fault. We have the power in our hands. And I always said, and I say it again, if we start to have an economic boycott, we will get what we need to get. You've seen that with the. When the down Atlanta, when they took the All-Star game out of Atlanta,
yes,
they missed that money. The
yes.
hotels, the business is going to put pressure on the politician, and the politician is going to listen if they want to get it reelected.
Right.
The other thing, I have this saying that these two things I always say when I have conversations: we are our worst enemy. We make everybody rich by ourselves, and we buy what we want and beg for what we need.
No, hey. I agree. I like it. My dad used to say that all the time. I agree.
Look, Dr. K, I like to see this station go in the hood. Say, do a show from Mondawmin. Do a show, a thing from North and Pennsylvania Avenue. Go where, because basically the people who call in or listen to the show, I would say is a little more educated or they, college students. The people who need to listen to this station, hear this type of talk or get this information, they don't tune into the station. They basically on. You know, station that play, the rap stuff and all that. So maybe Morgan could change to have a day or once a month that bring this station into the hood on a corner in here, West Baltimore or East Baltimore, Lexington Market or Northeast Market up by Hopkins, to reach the people who need to hear these type of conversations.
I appreciate that. We'll put that down. I mean, it's a possibility because we used to. I mean, Justina remembers, we used to go out. I mean, due to COVID, just like everybody else, we are exercising a certain amount of caution up here in our studio, putting the word out. But as things open back up, we want to get back out there. Let's go to Betty, Dwayne, Marlon, and Jean. Betty, how are you?
I'm fine, Dr. K. This is my first time calling.
Welcome.
I always listen in the car and never near my phone. But today I am, and it's a good day. You led off earlier with the question, are our kids okay? And you answered as I would answer, no, they are not. Mm. And I hear people calling, you know, talking about the various things that are wrong. I heard Dr. Wickham on your station a couple of days
yes.
ago when you asked him the question, are there any leaders who would die?
Like Randall Robinson.
And yeah. he said, no, but perhaps they have not emerged yet.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, they're walking around. They don't know that they are the one. They don't know that they are the ones. And then, this is going to sound like a tangent, but I'll bring it back together. I think about the adage that Hillary Clinton made popular, but we know it's an African adage. It takes a village
right.
to raise a child. Unfortunately, many of the villagers are standing in their living rooms looking out their windows complaining about the child. No one is actually working with the child. And so I offer this solution. Each of us, on a daily basis, see children out all the time. They're not our children, they're just children. We smile at them, we laugh. How about whenever you see a child doing something remarkable, that is something that is worth making a remark on, that we say something. Look at you. Look at what you're doing. This
right.
is great
yes.
that we inspire and encourage. Each of us can do that, educated or not. We can each do that. What I have done in my neighborhood, and I live in an urban neighborhood, and I'm happy to say that this morning when I woke up in the same room that I went to bed in when I was 6 years old.
Wow.
I have lived in this neighborhood long enough to remember the old women, and now I am the old woman
wow.
of the neighborhood. And I've seen it go up. I've seen it come down. I'm seeing it go back up. I've seen the children. I've seen how they have changed. But one thing that hasn't changed is their desire to learn. And if we give
yes.
that to them, I leave you with this. One of the most wonderful things that a child had said to me this year, when I, on my porch, when I come home, they all run to greet me, Miss Betty, Miss Betty. And one child said to me, we like coming up here because you always treat us with respect and you always teach us something new.
Yes, we can, I like
all
that.
We can all do that. That is a solution that we can all have. The other thing that I want to bring out is that your last caller talked about our power being eroded, and he mentioned a lot of things. I have recently discovered, or observed rather, that the people who are now carrying the morals and the values, seniors, are now being villainized in movies. We're becoming the criminals. We're becoming the people who are sitting in our basements using the technology that our grandchildren gave us to commit crimes. I give, for an example, Catch Bait on Netflix. And I'm now seeing another one that has been developed for Hulu, another one that was developed for Amazon, and I want us to keep our eye on, are they villainizing the last vessels of morals, values, and truth?
All right. I got to stop you there, Betty. I thank you for just
thank
putting
you.
This down the table, and also for standing tall in your community. Folks, it takes a lot to stay in your community from when you were 6 years old all the way to now. You're one of the elders in the community. The question we put on the table, are the babies okay, the children, the next generation, the young folk, are they doing okay? And I'm going to argue, and I'm going to stand firm and say they are not. Our children are not okay. Justina was telling me that there's a whole plan here in Baltimore City. Help me out, Justina. Where they're monitoring the laptops for children to see if they're talking about suicidation, that there's a concern that suicide rates among young people and depression rates among young people and violent activity among young people and addictions among young people, that is going up. Are the children okay? No. And you know what? Neither are we. We are not okay. If the children are not okay, then we are not okay. Let's go to Dwayne next from Baltimore City. Dwayne, how are you?
Happy to be here.
Hey, Dwayne, I can hear you. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Dr. K, you are talking about a lot of stuff today. So let me go real quick. You know, as far as our kids are concerned, if our kids ain't doing okay, just like you said, we ain't doing okay, but they're not doing okay because we haven't done okay by them. They are just a reflection of our collective consciousness as the adults.
Mm.
So they're just a reflection of us. So if your thought process is the kids ain't doing okay, the reason is go look in the mirror, and it's the collective consciousness of all of us. They're just a reflection of it and a reflection of our work and the work we didn't do, and making sure they have the right tracks laid in their brain cells for them to do right by the world and right by us and right by themselves. So that is on our plate. We have to lay that at our feet.
Right.
Okay. And Mark, the guy who came on, Mark, I'm assuming he's from the Nation. I'm not, of course, in the Nation,
right,
but I agree with him 100%. Unfortunately, it is too late. We've been sitting around for the past 40 to 50 years not even building up our own communities. And now that they've decided, now that we see a tide of politics that's gonna basically disband the Constitution, okay, now we're concerned. Now we're worried. Well, what have we been doing for the past 50 years?
Yeah. Is it too late? Is that what you're, Dwayne? Are you saying it's too late?
I'm saying my belief is probably too late, because we see the ugly politics that are basically saying the Constitution doesn't mean anything. And that's the only thing we've been able to hang our hat on to keep our noses above water.
And this country is not going to go back and revisit the Constitution. That's not going to happen. We're stuck with this imperfect document.
But the document is only as good as the people follow it. We see countries all over the world where they throw out their constitutions every other week. You don't think that can happen in America?
Right.
We never thought that people would ransack the Capitol in America. Not in America. We see they rolling back voting rights. This is just the beginning. They are not going to give up power to the minority class. You got to pry it from their cold, dead hands before they'll do that. They'll change every law. They'll disregard everything. As long as I can remember, Republicans have been talking about we need to reset the entire program.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Folks, you're putting things on the table, and we're just taking it in. I mean, it's just that kind of day. Someone asked, you know, when are we going to go out in the community? Folks, we were out in the community. We went to the median strip to talk to what we call the young squeegee enterprisers. We went to Carver High School when they saw a body on their way to school. We went to Cherry Hill School. So we do go out. We haven't gone out in a while because of COVID. And we will go out again. Because despite what people think, at some point, we are going to get through COVID-19. Now, I don't know what it's going to look like on the other side, but we're going to get through it. We have Marlon on the phone, then Ray, and then Gene. Marlon, how are you?
Good afternoon, Dr. K. I just wanted to put out something for maybe commentary. It's an idea I've been kicking around. I'm entering into the next phase. I'm eligible for retirement from my job. And I'm hearing all the comments, and I've been kicking around this idea that to set up an organization here in West Baltimore, where I live, that more or less empowers Black business. It surrounds the premise of the travel guide back in the civil rights era, where businesses were listed where during segregation, Blacks could go and patron. And different commodities were available to them. So my idea was to do the same thing in Baltimore, produce a travel guide, if you will, where the people of Baltimore City could come and empower their own business, own businesses, where it would be kind of a give and take, maybe set up standards where the businesses would have certain milestones to hire people from the community, certain levels of customer service, community investment, things of that nature to set up a standard where we're patroning the business and empowering the business to grow, and the business in turn empowers the community by offering economic opportunity.
Right.
So just something I was kicking around to possibly set up.
I like that. Where, have you connected with people? I'm thinking about Black businesses that I know off the top of my head. I'm thinking about Kevin Brown with Nancy by Snack. I'm thinking about Dovecote Cafe. I'm thinking, and Justina has the list of all different places, but there are Black businesses right here who I am sure would love to partner with you and move this forward. I mean, what we had been working on here today with Dr. K was a green book of local Black businesses. We have a ton of them on our website. You can go and see them. We try to support small businesses all the time because we have to support us. So thank you for that. Connect with those people and then get back to us. Folks, we want to take a quick break. When we come back, Ray, Donna, Gene, I want to hear from you. And I want to ask you something that Zora Simone put on Facebook Live. I'm going to ask you this question she put out there. We'll talk in a second after the break. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, I want to just tell you thank you for the ideas that you're putting on the table. My last caller talked about Black-owned businesses. Terra Cafe is one I want to mention. Casey Jenkins, the work that he's doing. Darker Than Blue is coming back. There's a wonderful vegan place. You know what I'm talking about, Justina? I'll have her send me the name of it. But there are a lot of Black-owned businesses in Baltimore City. If you want to support Black-owned businesses and you are intentional about it, you can find it for everything. I went out this weekend down to Red Canoe, which is not a Black-owned business, but there was a sister there selling lotion. And I was like, okay, let me support you. And then I went over to Walther Guards. There was a brother there selling incense. I'm like, okay, let me support you too. So if you want to support Black businesses like Land of Kush, it has amazing food, you can do that in Baltimore City. That's also a way that we free us by supporting us financially. 410-319-8888. We have Ray on the phone, then Gene, then Donna. Ray, how are you?
Yeah, one of the many challenges we have are many of the children in Baltimore City
Detroit, Philadelphia, pick your urban school system. Many of them de facto don't have parents. For instance, in Baltimore, we have 80,000 parents without a high school diploma. Many of them definitely don't feel capable of giving their children the support when it comes to homework and other educational services that their children need. We have 50,000 people in the city on disability. We have 50,000 heroin addicts. Those people are not in a position to teach and help their children as well as they could. Our children are going to funerals once every 2 or 3 months because of the homicide rate, so they're severely traumatized. So various solutions. I mean, is it too late? No. The question is, can we implement? We have fabulous data on what to do to improve our urban school system. Jonathan Kozol's been talking about this for 50 years.
Yes, he has.
Our problem is implementation, and the implementation always, the excuse is used, is money, where we spend more money on people in prison than we do K through 12. But for certain children, they need 24-hour schools. They're in high-risk home situations. I've shared with you before, we need a 5-to-1 student to teacher ratio like the top 100 schools in the country. For children that haven't mastered reading by third grade, they need a one-on-one until they've entered, because reading is the basics, even to mathematics. Even before we have an African curriculum, they have to learn reading by third grade. We have to stop suspending pre-K through elementary school children. We suspend and expel them. These children need severe emotional support. So due to time, I'm not going to keep going, but the question is not whether or not we have the ability to do it. The question is, do we as Black people collectively have a collective will to make our institutions educational, do our will to help our children.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Let's go to Gene, then we have Donna, we have Coley, we have Tavon. Let's continue with this conversation. The question we put on the table, are the kids okay? And no, they're not. So then the next question is, are we okay? Because I don't understand how we can be okay if they are not okay. 410-319-8888. Gene's on the phone, then Donna, Coley, and Tavon.
Hello, Dr. K. Yeah, I'm glad I followed Ray. Last Wednesday, Ray had on the Larry Show, comes on in the morning on AM. He had Noam Chomsky on his show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so funny. Nobody knows who the hell Noam Chomsky is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and basically, Noam Chomsky is an activist, was an activist.
Yes.
Doing the Soledad Brothers period when Angela Davis and even, you know, Marlon Brando.
Yeah, I know Noam Chomsky. He's a linguist, a philosopher, a social critic. Folks should be able to pull his work. He does a lot of work around analytical philosophy. I read him and used him in my dissertation. So
beautiful.
Go ahead.
Beautiful. Yes. I've got Dr. K. I know you know. Mm-hmm. But our people don't know. So basically, this is what I'm talking about. Are our kids okay? George Jackson made it a point for our children to be okay who were incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
He was teaching political science. He was teaching about the revolution. He was teaching about the young man who came on at the beginning of the segment. He used the word nationalism, and you instantly changed it, and you used another word and replaced it. And that's what in my opinion, that's what we have to stop doing. We have to stay on point. And you said Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington, they say, leave us alone. Just don't get in our way, and we'll be okay. That's what they said, right? And so, and of course, racism and white supremacy, Jim Crow, et cetera, got in our way. And I claim that integration put us back in the courts, just like in during Jim Crow times, you know, and limited our progress forward. But again, we have to be like Georgia Jackson, you know, and that's where we need to be. And Malcolm said, we are. I hate to say this, Dr. K. But we are like a boy in a white man's house. We're beggars. And that's our mindset right now. We are beggars. Until we become like everybody, all these other wonderful groups that we talk about who are nationalistic groups, you know, set aside the white nationalists, but the good white people, liberal nationalists, Asian nationalists, Hispanic nationalists, everybody but us, we are consumers. And
okay.
That's the role they regulate.
I appreciate your call, Gene.
Thank you, dear.
Thank
Have
you so much.
Day.
In terms of Noam Chomsky, folks, a lot of people chime in. They know who Noam Chomsky is. I mean, he's on Democracy Now! All the time. He's one of the most cited scholars out there. If you don't know who Noam Chomsky is, go take a look at his work. And when he talks about poverty of the stimulus and what happens with linguistics competence. So just take a look at that. Second, I don't think that we are boys in the white man's house, to quote my last caller. I think we are consumers. I think we consume a lot. I don't think we're beggars. I think we are trying to figure it out. I look at the fact that we have survived. I mean, let's not forget. I mean, I don't want to have to go all the way back, but I think that after my last caller, I'm going to have to go back. You got to understand that we were bought into a land enslaved. We were stolen from our home, traded off by other Africans in villages, put into a ship in the baseboard of a ship. We were bought. We did not know where we were going. We never saw our home again. We were taken out of a place like the Door of No Return over in Dakar, Senegal. We were over, you know, at Gori Island in Ghana. We walked the last mile in Benin and Togo. We were taken captured. Young girls were raped on that slave ship. Young boys were beaten on that slave ship. And a number of captured Africans fought back. Many of them were shot, thrown overboard. They said it got to the point sharks used to follow the slave ships because they knew food was coming. We were bought and then taken here. We were beaten. We were destroyed. We couldn't speak the language. And we were still in a box and we were sold off. Our bodies were inspected. We were dragged in chains onto plantation. We had to learn the language of our oppressor, of our captor, overnight if we wanted to survive. And then we had to find a way to live and to keep moving forward. And we did that in 1619. And we did that in 1719. And we did that in 1819. We kept moving forward. Those who could ran away. Those who couldn't stood and withstood what was happening during slavery. We became stronger because of it. We can never let our children forget that we come from people who chose to survive. They could have given up. They could have all jumped overboard. They chose to survive. And this is why the teaching of Black history is so important. If we don't teach our children the truth about who they are, the truth about who we are, the truth about where we've come from, they will never get. They will always think that we're boys in the white man's house. They will always think that we're just beggars. We're not. We're more than that. We're survivors. You got to think, folks, what it has taken for Black folks to get where we are today. We are survivors. And we may not be. Now, I'm thinking about something my daddy used to say. Dr. King said it, yes. I think every Black pastor from the South used to say this, that we ain't where we used to be, right? And we ain't where we gonna be. But thank God we come farther than where we knew we were going to be and where we knew we had to be. We all need, as surrogate Blacks, we need a good deep programming, y'all. We're more than just boys in the white man's house. Like that to me cuts off the knees of Carter G. Woodson and Booker T. Washington, W.B. Du Bois and Mary McLeod Bethune. It cuts off the knees of Alice Dunbar Nelson. It cuts off the knees of all the Black folks, your grandparents and mine. It cuts them off the knees to say we've come this far and we're just boys up in the house. No. We are men and women and we need to act as such. We are people. We need to act as such. We can control our own destiny. We need to act as such, and we need to stop letting them get up inside of our head and make us believe that we are the least of what we're supposed to be. We're more than how they see us. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Donna, then Coley, then Tavon.
Hi, Dr. K. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And I definitely agree with you. I don't agree with your last caller. The caller before him, he made some very good points. You know, we have a lot of work to continue to do, and we are survivors, and it's in our DNA. One of the things that Dr. Welsing said and Neela Fuller said is that we are the only group in the world that could free us from this white supremacy system globally, because we're the only group that understands how white supremacy works. And what she said is actually true. If we're the only group that actually can save this country, because we're the only group that's been enslaved and been, like you just, described all the atrocities that have happened to us since 1619 all the way up. So we know that we have the secret, we have the codes, and we know what to do. My other point is with the caller before the one that just called, the 80,000 African Americans who are semi-illiterate or who did not finish high school, there's still opportunities and chances for them. It's never too late, ever, to learn how to read and write. I don't care if they're 50, 60, 70, or 80. It's never too late. It's also never too late to reverse the damage that our school system have done to us. Under an old Jim Crow system, which we took over, that's now predominantly black, and we have to get the profit out of using our school system to make profit for us and to actually make our school system benefit for the learning of our African-American children. And my final point is, when we look at the psychological damage that has been done to us, we can overcome that. It's a lot of work. We need more African-American women and men in the mental health field, in mental health behaviors, psychologists, to start reversing the damage, not only to African Americans, but to white Americans, because they were damaged too by the same system, because they're victims of the same system that we're in. And we just need to continue to survive, which we will always survive. And we just need to push forward. And that what you just eloquently just said, get under cut with that gentleman, the last said, because we're not black boys in the white man's house. I don't agree with that.
No, I don't.
Yeah. And thank you for bringing us back from the past to the present, because you have to remind some of our people that we are survivors. When he said that, I'm like, wait a minute, we've been survivors. What was he talking about?
Yeah.
We're still survivors.
Yeah, we're more than that.
You know, for him to say that, you know, but I'm glad you brought it. And the gentleman before him reminded us that what kind of work we still need to do. And my final point is, and you know I keep saying this, but the 80,000 that are dropouts, we have to reform. While we're reforming the police system, the police department, we have to reform that social service system. Because what it did, when integration started kicking in, black people were married. And then when the families needed help, they told the black women, you can't have the black man in the home. So he had to go and live with his parents.
Yep.
While she lived by herself raising these children. And that practice still exists today.
It's a way of collapsing our system. That's what it is. It collapses our system.
If a couple gets married, and he gets assistance. I knew a couple of couples that with a male had a disability, and he found a woman, and she's working, and he's like a part-time employee, As soon as they got married, they cut him off. They didn't give a grace period for him to get himself together. They cut him off. And that system is a failure, and it needs to be revamped and because it's still on the old Jim Crow system. And thanks, Dr. K, for my time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Folks, the phone lines are just ringing off the hook. Let me take a look at the time. All right, we're going to go to everybody. Got to give you 2 minutes. I know there's a lot of people here. I want to get to you all. Let me go to Calvin, a new caller from Maryland. I'll go to Z from Northwest Baltimore, and I'll keep it going from there. Calvin, how are you?
Good evening, Dr. K. This is Calvin Jones, Jr. I'm calling live from Baltimore. I am actually a 28-year-old survivor of everything that we are talking about. I was a victim of losing both of my parents at a young age, but my parents taught me something out of the Word of God when they told me, they said, without knowledge, the people are going to perish. And I think in order for us to recover from a now acting pandemic, you know, building our youth, building our young people, college students graduating, going to school virtually, I feel like we really need to empower them in the knowledge of who they are. I was 17 years old when the whitewashed mentality was decoded off of my life. When I read in the scriptures and I looked at those children of Israel and I could see myself in that. The problem that we have in this time is that we cannot see ourselves as a royal priesthood, as a chosen generation. And in order for us to have that transformation globally, we must first see ourselves as who we were created and designed to be in the likeness and in the image of God. And that comes through knowledge. That comes through understanding. And I believe that if we just go back to the basics, with our young people, with our old people, we can thrive, we can grow, and we can move forward. And I like what the lady before me said. It's about formation. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to put these young people in formation. Because 30 years from now, we might not be here to be that voice of reason. But if we put things in formation in our schools, in our churches, in our college universities,
right.
I believe from the ashes, we will rise and we will be that royal chosen generation that we have been deemed to be from the beginning of time. That's my 2 minutes. I greet you.
Thank you so much.
Covenant Fellowship. I love you.
Thank you so much, Calvin. Let's go to Z, then Tavon. No, I'm sorry. Let's go to Tavon. Tavon's been holding a minute, and then we'll go to Z and then Ivory. Tavon, sorry about that. Thanks for holding.
That's fine. Dr. K, I kind of got to push back a little bit.
Okay.
I don't like the term surviving, because surviving means we're just enduring some type of oppression or abusive system or something like that. And we just I don't live with the what don't kill me make me stronger mentality. At some point, we can't just survive. We got to fight back. Some things need to be left on the battlefield. Unfortunately, that's the way it has to be. And that's the only time when people really want to induce change into this system, into this country. The only reason why slavery ever really went anywhere is because people fought and died for that to go away. So, I mean, surviving, I don't like it. I don't like it because it means, yeah, we survived today, but tomorrow we may not have to endure what we survived today, but tomorrow is something different. Like, if it ain't the school system, like the lady says, the social service system, it's a prison system. So we're constantly surviving everything. At what point eventually something will get us.
Okay. So what would you say? How would you describe the situation that black folks have been enduring in this country since 1619? What would you use? Just so we get all on the same page. What do you think?
I can't think of a term now that would aptly describe what we've been going through, but surviving is just don't do it for me. And it might just be the semantics.
Right.
That may just be semantics, but I personally don't like that we just surviving thing. And then especially when you said the people on the ships that came over here that survived, that chose to survive,
yeah,
as if death is easy. Some people decided to drown because they would much rather drown. They felt more free if they were dead than they would be if they were captured. Now, I don't know about you, but I've never faced a situation where I had to choose life or death in that moment. But I wouldn't perceive that death is any much easier than being enslaved.
No, but I do. Now, that's very interesting that you said that, Tavon, because I actually see it as a point of pride. knowing that my ancestors could have made a different choice. But yet, even though they knew that they would probably never see freedom, they kept living anyway. I think survival is a choice that you make every day. I was never enslaved. You were not either. So I don't know what that was like. I can only imagine what it means every single day to make the choice to continue. When you look behind you, there's nothing but slavery, and you're looking in front of you and thinking there's nothing but slavery. Like, your condition where you are, this is what it is. That, to me, choosing to say, I'm going to get back up tomorrow and I'm going to keep moving forward, keep loving my children, loving the person I'm with, loving the other black folks on this plantation, and we're going to keep moving forward. That's what I mean by survival. Right. That's what I mean by being a survivor.
It may just be semantics.
Yeah.
On my part. So.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. I mean, something that Zora Simone said on Facebook Live, she's like, look, when you survive in a white supremacy system, stand up and be proud. Sergis Black said perseverance is the word. Okay, so we have persevered. Like, I'm just saying, folks, I'm not being offensive when I say we survive. I'm not. I actually have so much respect for our ancestors who survived. I mean, you know, they're just, I have so many questions when I take a look at the past. I look at the fact that Frederick Douglass, who was born enslaved, who remembers his mother walking in the middle of the night to see him, who was married to a black woman, a freeborn black woman who could not read or write, freeborn, but she helped him to get free. He stayed with her until he died, and his second wife was a white woman. That's a surprise to me as a formerly enslaved man, but he was free, and he said, and when he did a speech, what does my wife's race have to do with anything? Dude stood up and said, this is who I am. These are the choices that I'm making. Survival. Survivor. Frederick Douglass. Harriet Tubman, who stole herself and then she went back. Unlike Frederick Douglass, who, you know, relaxed in his freedom and became this superstar celebrity, Girlfriend went back and forth making sure that other people can get the freedom as well, that nobody is free until everybody is free. I'm just saying that to me is the mark of a survivor. And we should take a point of pride in knowing that we've survived what we've gone through and we stood strong on the other side. Now, I am not Jewish, as you know, but I have friends, and they talk about the teaching that they got when they were younger about the Holocaust and what they went through during their bar mitzvah, their bat mitzvah. And one of the things they talk about is, what does it mean to survive? What does it mean that people, their ancestors, chose to survive? They were hiding, you know, down in urinals. They were hiding out in the woods. They were hiding under baseboards, hiding up in attics. But they kept moving forward, knowing that they were doing it for the next generation. That's what I mean when I say that we come from survivors. And I think we should be teaching our children that. We have Z on the phone from Northwest Baltimore. Z, then Jamal, then Sekou. Z, how are you?
How are you? Okay, I'm from Northeast Baltimore.
Thank you.
From Morgan College. And I agree with you and a couple of callers before you, before Donna, about we are survivors. We're more than survivors. We're thrivers.
Yes.
We're thrivers. We're not in survival mode anymore. And I'm a baby boomer. And I watched a whole generation of our men be sent to prison, die from drugs, or either they became homosexual. So that didn't leave many men to watch over the children. However, the women of my generation, I'm right in the middle. I was born in the 50s, late 50s. We are the ones who are holding up the children now.
Right.
And to say that our children is not anything, it's to say that we're not anything. I don't agree with that. But I also agree with that Japanese experiment about the 100 monkeys. You ever heard of that?
No, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a Japanese experiment. This Japanese scientist did an experiment with 100 monkeys who he fed sweet potatoes on a sandy beach. Mm-hmm. And out of 100 monkeys, they were eating what they cut the sweet potatoes up and put them in the sand, and the monkeys started to eat them. And out of 100 monkeys, one female decided to take the sweet potatoes, put them in the water to rinse the sand off. And when she did that, the other monkeys caught on and they started doing the same thing, and then they found out that the sweet potatoes tasted better. That's what's going to happen to us. It's not going to take our whole nation to come to that 100 monkey theory. All it's going to take is a handful of strong black people like you, myself, Donna, and the people who call here. It's not going to take a whole lot of us, just a few strong people, like you said, to bring us up out of this mess, to change the plight of our nation. That's all it's going to take. It would take only the baby boomers alone. If we all got together, did what we had to do. One, you know, anything could change in one day. But we have to decide to do it. And I'm willing. I wonder how many other people are willing. Because I'm tired. You're not the only one that should be coming on a show every day telling us what we need to do. We know what we need to do. We need to get up and do it.
I appreciate
that's simple.
You. Thank you so much, Zia. I appreciate you. And also, folks, for the 100th monkey effect, it was popularized actually in the mid to late 1970s by a philosopher and scientist, Lionel Watson. And so the study that Zia is talking about is how they would study primates, and what they were looking at is what does it take to introduce new behavior? That if one monkey did it and the other monkeys caught on, they actually took that one monkey and released her with different primates to see if her behavior would catch hold. The idea is that it only takes one person, only one spark, to bring about a change. And that's what Z is getting to. Let's go to Jamal and then Sekou. Jamal, how are you? Jamal, are you with us? Hey, sir, how are you?
I'm doing good. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, good, good, good. Yeah, it's actually my first time calling in.
Hey!
Yeah, me and my wife, we're fans of your show. So everyone out and about, we put on 889. When you're on, we enjoy listening.
Thank you.
Really good time. But I was feeling something that one of the other callers had said. And he had made that comment about how, he said that we're basically, hey, we felt like little boys inside of the white man's house. Mm. And I wanted to kind of add on to that. I can kind of see where I could agree and / disagree. I think us as a people, we've done plenty of things. We've created things. We've invented things.
Yes.
Even now, looking at a streetlight right now.
Come on.
So we got a lot of things going for us. But we're still at a point where we're still making strides. I don't think we've gotten to a place where we're 100% self-sufficient or independent yet. And what I'll give you as an example is I've been producing music for a number of years, like 15, 17 years now. And I kind of been studying, the game and how it runs, record labels and stuff like that. So a lot of my favorite artists is like the J.
Are we out of time? We are done. Sekou, I'm so sorry we can't get to you. Folks, this has been a powerful show. I'll end with what Mabel says here on Facebook Live. We have to fight to live, to survive, to get through this. There are so many factors that are influencing the end of us. Example, those who do not leave behind descendants. Look, folks, we got to fight, but we will get through this. And when we do, when we get to the other side, why don't we make a commitment to get to the other side together? Keep it here for Two-Way Talk with Anthony McCarthy and Carol Williams. After that, you have the Morgan News Hour at 6, and then you have late night music at 7, and then just roll around 2 p.m. Meet me back here tomorrow for another conversation that matters. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve you in this way.